There comes a time in our life when it's time to quit learning and it's time to make a commitment. It's time to get off the sidelines. Be turning, if you would, to Matthew chapter 16. It's a passage that's very familiar to us. In fact, I remember lots and lots of years ago, this was one of the passages that we memorized when I was in school. Kind of funny about memorization these days. You don't know if anybody's quoting it correctly or not because we don't all use the King James Version anymore. So you don't know if being quoted correctly. But the Jews, the setting here is Peter's confession of Christ. The Jews are actively conspiring for Jesus' death at this point. The crowds are still enamored with Jesus. And Jesus knows what is in man, and he would not commit himself to any man, the Bible says. And so we're waiting to see what happens as we read the story in Matthew chapter 16, beginning in verse 13, when Jesus came to the coast of Caesarea Philippi. He asked his disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others Elijah, still others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You're the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus replied, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah. This was not revealed to you by man, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you're Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." Then he warned his disciples not to tell anyone he was the Christ. The time has come for the final exam. We're approximately 2.5 years into Jesus' public ministry when he asked his disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" This is the very apex of Jesus' life. Everything has been aimed toward this moment. The setting, in verse 13, he came to the region of Caesarea Philippi. Caesarea means of Caesar. And at this time in history, there were lots of Caesareas. In fact, pretty much every ruler of every country that was under Rome wanted to name some city Caesar so that they would honor Caesar. And then it was not unusual that they would want to attach their name to it also, Philippi. There's another Caesarea not very far away. If you look at your map on the coast north and west of Jerusalem, on the coast there is a Caesarea. But this is the Caesarea in Philippi. The northernmost point of Israel was Dan, northernmost city. The southernmost city was Beersheba. And as you read your Old Testament, whenever the Old Testament writers wanted to address the entire country, they would often say from Dan to Beersheba. That would be from the northern city to the southern city. About 2.5 miles west of Dan was the city Peneus. It was named for the god Pan, who was supposedly born in a cave in the headwaters of the Jordan in that area. And Pan was the god of nature, and they worshipped him as the creator and the god of nature. If you were at the north end of the Sea of Galilee and you proceeded north and slightly east about 25 miles, you would be going up a plateau that rises some 1,700 feet above sea level. And that plateau stretches along the base of Mount Hermon. And Mount Hermon was one of the really highest points in that part of the world, 9,232 feet. It was snow-capped most of the year. And from that plateau at the base of it, It provided a panoramic view of the cities of northern Galilee, of Cana, Nazareth, and the cities that surrounded it. And so you had a really beautiful view here as you went around the small towns in that area. On that plateau, the city of Peneus, the city was occupied primarily by Gentiles because it was a frontier town right on the border. Philip the Tetrarch changed the name of Peneus to Caesarea and attached his name to it, Philippi. And this is where Jesus retreated more than one time with his disciples. It evidently was a beautiful place. There were some streams of water there. It was greenery on that plateau. And they were able to look out over a large distance and see the panoramic view. Mark and Luke fill us in with some additional interesting details. Mark tells us that this conversation between Jesus and his disciples came as they were walking on some of the rural roads between some of those small villages around Caesarea Philippi. Later in Matthew, Pilate will ask a corollary question, "What shall I do with Jesus who is called the Christ?" But that's for another lesson. Let's look at this question that Jesus asked his disciples in verse 13. "Who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" It's interesting to me. In fact, I've become intrigued more so by it in recent times, trying to figure out why Jesus kept referring to himself as the Son of Man. It was obviously associated with some messianic prophecy. But Jesus used this title more often than any other to refer to himself. And for whatever all of his reasons were, he wanted to identify himself with man. There were times when he will refer to himself, fewer times, but with the title, the Son of God. But he most often refers to himself as the Son of Man, I think from a very practical standpoint, because he wanted his disciples and others to be able to relate to him, not just as deity, but also fully as man. 2.5 years, all of the miracles, and who knows how many. How many times did it say, and he healed all of their sick in that region? How many miracles had been performed? All of the hours and hours of teaching, the confrontations with those who would oppose him, all of the prophecy that was one after another being fulfilled. And now this crucial question: do the people know who he is? Everybody's talking about him. Everybody's speculating about who he might be. And I'm confident that Jesus knew what the people were saying. But I also believe that he asked this question because he wanted his disciples to make a clear distinction between what they believe and the speculation of the crowds. Because it's really easy to keep yourself in limbo and just say, well, you know, not all the evidence is in yet. I haven't made my mind up. And you can live in that area of limbo and never really make a decision about Jesus. But now the lessons are over. It's time for the examination. It's commitment time. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 21 through 23, "For since in the wisdom of God the world through its wisdom did not come to know God, God was well pleased through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe." Since the world could not and would not come to conclusion about who he was, then the avenue through which Jesus and God designed to bring people to a conclusion about who Jesus was through what the world would consider foolishness, and that is the preaching, the message that's preached. Then it continues, "For indeed Jews ask for signs and Greeks seek wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, to the Jews a stumbling block and to the Gentiles foolishness." And so there is no end to asking for signs. There is no end to seeking for wisdom. And some of us may find ourselves in that situation about things, maybe even certain things about Jesus today. That we study things and we're not quite sure about it, and we go to commentaries and we try to find out what we can, and we go to other people And we just keep ourselves in a state of limbo, and we never make a decision about it. But Jesus is ready for his disciples to come to a conclusion, to make a commitment about who he is. And that time is necessary in every single person's life, that we come to a point when it's time to get off the fence. It's time for us to make a commitment. The response, "Who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" Peter spoke up and he said, "Well, some people say that you're John the Baptist." And this brings me back to chapter 14, verse 1 and 2. Whenever Herod heard about Jesus preaching, then his paranoia came out. And he's decided, he said, "This is John the Baptist who is risen from the dead." Now, if you think about the fact it had been his responsibility that he had put John to death, and it bothers his conscience because he didn't want to put him to death, but he allowed himself to be trapped. And I'm fairly confident that every night that he went to sleep, he saw John's head on that platter. He saw John's face. And he knew that an innocent man had died at his hands. And so he was paranoid about it. And whenever Jesus came and he heard stories about what Jesus was doing, it sounded to him like it was John the Baptist. There was a difference between John the Baptist and Jesus. One of the differences, there were a number of differences, but one of them was that John worked no miracles, the Bible said. And so in order to explain how Jesus could be John, he said, "This is John who's risen from the dead." Well, if John had come back from the dead, it wouldn't be too hard to believe that now he could work miracles, would it? Since if you could believe he had come back from the dead. He was the forerunner of the Messiah, had not worked miracles. But if he had risen from the dead, then that would explain now this newfound ability to work miracles. He said, "Others say you're Elijah." Elijah represented the summit of the prophetic office. And Malachi chapter 4, verse 5, "Behold, I send you Elijah before that great and terrible day of the Lord." They were looking for Elijah. Both Elijah and John the Baptist were forerunners of the Messiah and the prophecies. If you were to attend a Jewish Passover, even yet today, you would notice an empty chair at the table. And that chair is reserved for Elijah. They're still looking for Elijah to come today. And others said, "You're Jeremiah." There's some interesting stories about Jeremiah. In the apocryphal book Maccabees, there are many interesting stories and legends. And one of them tells about Jeremiah prior to Babylonian captivity in 586 B.C. And it says that he took the Ark of the Covenant and the altar of incense out of the temple so that the Gentiles would not desecrate it, and he hid them in Mount Nebo. And legend had it that before the Messiah comes, Jeremiah will come and retrieve those articles and deliver them to Jerusalem. There's another legend in 2 Maccabees about Jeremiah delivering a golden sword to Judas Maccabeus, who uses it to deliver Jewish rebels from the Greeks. And so Jeremiah was a hero to the Jews. And they were also looking for Jeremiah to come back to usher in the new age that they were looking for. These same two factors were present. He also was a forerunner of the Messiah. And returning from the dead would explain the miracles once again. Or others say that you're one of the prophets. And that one wouldn't quite fit into the mold if you didn't read all of the gospel accounts of this incident that's recorded here in Matthew 16. Luke adds, "Are one of the prophets risen again?" And so that again puts it into the category of this is how people were trying to explain Jesus and the miracles. They all recognized that he was supernatural. And each one of these speculations, John the Baptist returned from the dead, Elijah obviously returned from the dead, Jeremiah, the same thing, one of the prophets risen again. Each one of these speculations offered possible explanations for the miracles that some of them had not performed during their life. And so now they've said, this is what people are saying about you. This is what they're speculating about. And they can accept you as any one of these persons. But there's something missing. The big part, isn't it? The Messiah. They could not. The people could not accept him as the Messiah. They could accept him as the forerunner. They could accept him as one who is to come before and lay the groundwork and usher it in. But they could not accept Jesus as the Messiah. And the point being, they were close, weren't they? But close only counts in, yeah. And so close wasn't good enough. And then the second question, the first one was, what are people saying? Who are people saying that I, the Son of Man, am? And then he said, who do you say that I am? What about you? The destiny of every human rests in this question, individually, for us. But Peter answers, as you would probably guess, you're the Christ. You're the Messiah. You're the Anointed One, the Son of the Living God. Peter acts as spokesman for the whole group. They've certainly discussed it. They've been discussing it for 2.5 years. Who is he? Concise. Emphatic, brief, unqualified. But they knew this all along, right? I mean, when it started out in John chapter 1, verse 41, Andrew ran to find Peter and he said, we have found the Messiah. And so they've known it since the beginning, haven't they? But then later in his ministry, he didn't overthrow the Romans. He didn't set up this kingdom that they've been looking for. And the humility and the rejection came. And John himself sent messengers later to ask, are you the Messiah or should we look for someone else? At times they were strong, at times they were certain, and then at times they were weak. Whenever he calmed the storm, whenever he healed the sick, raised the dead, then their faith would be flamed up and they would feel confident, then something would happen that they weren't quite so sure. But he said, you're the Messiah. They had reached this conclusion by this point. The Son of the Living God. Remember John chapter 5, verse 17 and 18, that whenever Jesus had confessed that he was the Son of God, it says the Jews took up stones to stone him because he said that he was God, he said that God was his Father, making himself equal to God. It was for that very thing that they just said that they had intended to kill Jesus. Excuse me. And then Jesus' response in verse 17, you didn't get this from reasoning or analysis or tradition. You got this from my Father in heaven. He's the source. He's the one who's revealed this to you. Matthew chapter 11, verse 27, Jesus said something that takes a lot of consideration on our part to understand. No one knows the Son except the Father. No one knows the Father except the Son and those to whom the Son chooses to reveal him. Really interesting statement. To whom did the Father reveal it? That no one knows the Son but the Father. To whom did the Father reveal this? He revealed it to those who had eyes, ears, and hearts to hear and to understand, to see. How did he do it? He did it through years of their being with Jesus and following him. You see, you cannot come to faith in God's Son until you walk with Jesus. Really. You have to try him on. You have to test him. You have to taste him. You have to feel him. You have to walk along beside him to know if he's real or not. And listen to him. Thank you. And follow him wherever he goes. You remember what he said about how you learn of me? Take my yoke upon you and learn of me. You can't know about him from a distance. You have to be involved in him and allow Him to be involved in you before you can really know it. If you want to hold Jesus off at arm's length and come to know Him from that distance, you'll never. You'll always remain in that zone somewhere, straddle that fence. You'll never come to the point where you'll absolutely make this confession that's necessary in order for you to truly be a disciple of Jesus. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me. And you'll learn some things about me that you didn't know. I'm meek and lowly in heart. There's no way you can know that about Jesus. The world doesn't know that about Jesus. The only way that you can really come to know Jesus is by following Him. The evidence, there are two areas. His words, Matthew 7:22, many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord. You see, He claimed to be the Lord of judgment whenever He said, many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord. So He put Himself in a position when He said that as the judge, as the one before whom men are going to stand. In Matthew 5:17, I have come to fulfill the law and the prophets. He taught divine truth. And then the second area of evidence, obviously, He said, if you don't believe me for what I say, then believe me for what I do. Look at my works. And you'll only have two possibilities. One is this power comes from God, or as the Jewish leader said, it comes from Satan. That's your choice to make. And He refuted that by saying that's not possible. For if Satan is against Satan, a house divided against itself, it's going to fall. And so if I'm casting demons out by the power of Satan, then all you have to do is just step back and watch Satan's kingdom fall. But it didn't fall, did it? The evidence is His word and His works. And it still is the evidence for today. The people had said, we can explain His words and we can explain His works. In John or Elijah or Jeremiah or one of the risen prophets. But that left them short of the truth. Close, but not close enough. And what's your answer? Who do you say that Jesus is? And that has to make a difference in our life. It can't just be a confession from the lips out. There comes a time in our life to make a commitment. There comes a time to get out of that neutral zone. There comes a time to quit saying, okay, I'm just gathering evidence. I think this, I think maybe this. There comes a time when we have to make a commitment. And the interesting thing is that if we continue in that no man's land, refusing to make a commitment long enough, then the truth is we drift further and further away from making that commitment. The longer that we put it off. Once there has been sufficient evidence that's been given, then there comes a time when God will turn the light out. Whenever that evidence is obvious and we refuse to make a commitment, talking and studying and discussing and speculating can continue indefinitely. And it can substitute for making a commitment. Jesus said, if you'll confess me before men, I'll confess you before my Father. But if you deny me before men, then I'll deny you before my Father. And so, the question is still as pertinent for you and me, and it is as important in our life as this was for Jesus and His disciples. Who do you say that Jesus is? And what are you doing about that in your life while we stand and sing?
I must needs go home by the way of